Blog Talk Radio.
Muscle aches, rashes.
To find an answer.
Hair loss. I'm so tired.
You need to ask your doctor the right question.
Could I have lupus?
For answers, for support, for hope, visit couldihavelupus.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services Office on Women's Health and the Ad Council.
Good morning, and welcome to the second half of Saturday Mornings with Joy Keys. I'm your host, and you can follow me on Twitter.com/Joy Keys. Also, check me out on Facebook. Look up Saturday Mornings with Joy Keys. And I'm on Instagram. Also, I want to let people know you guys can email me if you have any questions or concerns or suggestions. SaturdaysWithJoyKeys@Hotmail.com. Again, that's SaturdaysWithJoyKeys@Hotmail.com. Also, I want to let you know you can download the shows on iTunes. All the archive shows over the last several years. If you look up Joy Keys, all the shows will pop up, and you can download them from there. So you can be walking, listening to it on your iPhone. I'm team iPhone. You can also listen to them on your Android, but I'm team iPhone. So anyway, I just want to thank you for your support. Like 1.2 million downloads of the show, just amazing. And again, just thank you so much. Well, I am blessed. This is like the third, maybe fourth time she's been on the show. This author has written so many books, I can't even name them all, but they have really been on the forefront for science fiction, fantasy, you know, just breaking barriers for African-American writers in these particular fields that you may not think they would be in, but she's there, as well as her husband. They're both very talented individuals. And she's on the line, I believe, right now.
Yes.
Good morning.
Yes, I'm on the line. Hey, good morning.
Hi. What were you going
to
say?
Glad to be here. No, just glad to be here. It's a little earlier on the West Coast.
Yes, yes. Thank you. And that's why I'm blessed, because you woke up at 8:30 your time to talk to me at 11:30 my time.
Yes.
Let me just tell the audience, this is author Tanana Reeve-Dhu, and we're going to be talking about her book, Ghost Summer Stories. Again, but she's been on the show several times, so if you want to look up Joy Keys and Tanana Reeve-Dhu together, you'll see several other interviews we've done about many of her other books. Also, she worked on the book on a series with Blair Underwood, so you want to check that out. But today we're talking about Ghost Summer Stories. Don't read this at night before you're about to go to bed at 2 o'clock in the morning like I did or something like that, because you will need your teddy bear. And the light on, maybe the room light, the hallway light, and then the other room light, just to make sure there's nobody in there behind the door.
Ooh, that bad.
Wow. Well, you know, because you don't know what's coming, because you're kind of smooth about it, you know. You're very smooth, and you get us sucked in, and we're like, okay, no, this is just the normal, the mom and daughter having some difficulties, you know, maybe postpartum depression type of thing, or oh, she's swimming in that pool. What's wrong with swimming in the pool? There's nothing wrong. You know what? Oh, some animal's going to come get her. No, she becomes the animal and goes gets other things.
Okay, well, I'll admit, some of the stories are a bit strange.
A bit odd. But you know what? I really like the intro that was written for the book, and Nalo Hopkinson really nailed it about, you know, just like this eerie sense that you give, you know, and she had no idea that, you know, such a nice, generous, kind type of person would have these crazy thoughts and write about them, you know. She was really shocked. I, too, was shocked.
Really? Now, that's surprising after all these years. Okay, good.
Yeah, not as much. Not as much. I don't think so. No, not as much. But let's talk about, one, why this short stories? Why did you not just write another book again? What made you decide to, like, you know what, let me do these little things here?
You know, I had been writing novels for years. And in fact, even though I submitted short stories as I was developing as a writer, I never had one published. There was one publisher that said yes to a story that's not actually in this collection, and then they went out of business. So when I published my first novel in 19... I know, it was terrible. I was so heartbroken. And it was years before I got another acceptance letter. But it was actually for my novel, The Between, which came out in 1995. And I went on like that. I actually quit my job. I became a full-time novelist for 15 years. And the only reason I ever went back to short stories was when editors made inquiries and said, would you write this? When Sheree Thomas was doing Dark Matter, which is this groundbreaking anthology of Black science fiction and fantasy, she said, will you write a story? So over the years, I said yes to several editors, including Nala Hopkinson, Fantasy and Science Fiction Magazine asked me to write a story in tribute to Harlan Ellison, the great science fiction legend. So I had all these stories that I'd collected, but I didn't have a home for them. And you know what? I was very surprised that when I tried to sell it to my big commercial house, they really weren't interested in a short story collection. You know, I was like, really? This is, I had no idea. I had never tried before.
Mm.
So I ended up going to a very small press called Prime Books. I've known the editor, Paula Grant, since my very first novel. I remember she wrote a blurb about me saying, learn the name, learn how to pronounce it. This is going to be a big voice in the horror field kind of thing. And so she was always a supporter. And it's been very, very exciting. It's a teeny little press, but the book is getting such great notice. We were just mentioned in the LA Times as one of the holiday books, you know, that you should buy. I just got listed in a book of a list of 15 powerful books in The Root. So it's like, wow. And Publishers Weekly, probably one of the best books of the year. So yeah, it's been a super exciting ride and very gratifying after a little bit of a challenge in the beginning.
Well, you know, you deal with so many topics in the book, not just, you know, people are thinking, oh, it's about ghosts. The whole thing is not about ghost people, okay? There are ghosts there in some of the stories, but you're also dealing with family. You're dealing with love. You're dealing with, you know, relationships. You're dealing with death and dying, but not necessarily really to ghosts per se all the time. But
right.
Just what
right.
happens to the person who's dying, I believe, and also how the people outside the person who's dying, like how are they handling it, you know?
Yeah.
So those are really powerful issues. Let's talk about that a little bit, the death and dying.
What's up with that?
You know, the last... There's a lot in there, okay? Can somebody just please live and survive? Like, really? You know?
Well, you know, some people do survive. In fairness, there are some survivors in this story. In fact, one of my trilogies is about the burden of survival, you know, when you're in a plague and everyone else is dying. But, you know, it's no secret probably to people who've read my work that I have a little bit of a fascination with mortality. And I cannot fully explain what that is, except from a very young age, having a very strong awareness that no matter what is on the other side, this is a finite experience. I was never able to lull myself into that kind of denial I think most of us live with every day, that this is just the way things will be. Now, things catch me by surprise. My mother's illness and death really, even with that, still caught me by surprise. And I processed some of that in this collection. There's a story called Vanishing, which tries to capture what it feels like when someone's there one minute and gone, you know, the next. It's like the mind cannot exactly wrap around it. So every story I write is coming from a different direction, and sometimes it's ghosts, sometimes it's zombies, sometimes it's demons, sometimes it's the monster within. There are a lot of it's plague. But I'm always sort of trying, sort of fussing with this notion of how to survive, how to, in a weird way, yes, some of the stories are a little depressing, but also they're about how we embrace our survival and march forward despite whatever the monster was, you know, despite whatever the losses have been. And to me, that really is the story of our human condition, whether we're in denial or not. Loss will find us. Death will find us.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
I'm just trying to give myself life lessons in a fun way. And I say fun meaning entertaining, you know, because for me a zombie story is fun.
I was about to say, what did you say? Did you say comedy?
Fun.
Are you going on the road with this?
No, I didn't say funny.
Yes, you said fun. Let's talk about...
Fun, yeah, there's a difference between fun and funny.
Right. Oh, you know, and she's a teacher. She's a professional. She'll correct you, okay? So don't watch out here.
Exactly.
Let's talk about
exactly.
The cloning story. The cloning story, because in terms of survival, that story, Like Daughter, really took it to the nth degree, you know. In our culture, we have a problem right now with cloning. We have an issue. People are for it, and they think it could be great. It could be help a lot of health issues. you know, people dealing with, you know, MS or lupus or, you know, spinal, you know, issues. And then there's other people like, oh, my God, the clones are going to take over, like the computers are going to take over, and there will no longer be any of us. So it goes to the self and the other. And I was just speaking about that on my previous show with the astrologer Samuel F. Reynolds about this battle between the self and other. But in terms of trying to survive, can you elaborate the audience about that story, like daughter, and a little bit, without, I guess, giving everything away, but
yeah,
your ideas
called,
and how you
like,
came
I'll
up
try
with
not
this.
To give. Yeah, it was during a time when cloning was very much in the news. There had been a scientific breakthrough in terms of isolating a cell in animals, not in humans. And I really was just sort of fascinated by this idea of why we're so interested in cloning, because two sheep can reproduce and have more sheep. So what's the big deal with going through all this scientific effort to clone a sheep when we can just create sheep the old-fashioned way? And I also apply that question to the idea of human cloning. I think people either assume clones would be these kinds of mindless, you know, drones, which they're not. They're just people.
Mm.
When they come, they'll just be people. Or they'd be carbon copies of us, which in some ways they would be. You know, I'm sure if I had a clone, she could look a lot like me and have, you know, some of my mannerisms, et cetera. But her life would be determined by her experiences. So she would not have grown up, you know, in the 1970s in Miami with two civil rights parents, going to newly integrated schools, and, you know, that's my experience. So I wanted to write a story that really, to me, got to the heart of what people are yearning for when they think about cloning. And I think the deep yearning is that question of a second chance, something to undo the trauma, because we're also created by our traumas. And someone who had an incredibly traumatic life, I'm sure they must wonder, what might I have been if this terrible thing had not happened to me?
Well, you also deal with just in terms of relationships between mother and daughter. There's a lot of mother-daughter things going on, and one of them was dealing with a baby. That did have ghosts in it. And... But
I'm
what
laughing,
I like about all these stories is that you're weaving in other issues. For example, like you're dealing with the woman's a military wife. You know, her husband's away, you know, and for long periods of time. He's going to be away for a couple months in the summer, and he's telling her, you know, don't worry, I'll be back when I get back. You know, everything will be great. And, you know, maybe she is dealing with postpartum. You know, that's a serious issue now. We have so much going on around the country with vets, and people are talking about the actual vet, but people fail to remember about the vet's family.
Yes, those families get left behind, especially the mom.
Yes.
But I've always felt bad. And let's face it, I'll admit, I wrote the story you're thinking about, which is a story called Summer. When I was a pretty new mom, I'd had a stepdaughter, but I met her when she was 11. So I was there for the teenage years, you know, which have their own challenges, but it's not the same as a baby. And when you're a child, and my son had a very strong personality, he still has a very strong personality. So when he was about 18 months old and that personality kicked in, the tantrums start. And I think for a lot of new moms, those tantrums might look like some kind of a possession, you know. So I wanted to take that idea of possession and examine it from another angle, and make it a little less cut and dried. We all think if our child became possessed, we would move heaven and earth to change that situation, however, whatever it takes. But, you know, there are some forms of possession, perhaps, that might be a little bit of a relief for what you've been dealing with. So the question becomes, then, Mom, what are you going to do? What's your choice here, okay? You may not understand what's happened, but your child seems okay. Just a little different. It's not your child. You can tell this is not your child, but are you in such a hurry, really? Are you to go back to the way things were?
And that's the twist. That's the beauty of the writing, because you're expecting, when somebody says possession, well, I mean, immediately you're thinking negative, something really bad. But somehow this possession actually was not a bad thing for this mother. You know, so that's the twist, you know. So you guys have to read that. Now, talking about zombies and stuff like that, you get into the kind of, you know, Walking Dead, if you will, because that's a lot of people are watching that story. What is that? Dangerwood. That was the one and the little boy. And it was a really fast-paced, just the heart. You know, I was like, oh, my God, he's in the safe room. He's in it. They were driving down the road in the pedal. I mean, that was like really fast paced. How do you write from the calm? You know, there's the lush of the grass and the warmth of the sun and the crackling of the wood. And then all of a sudden you're like the safe room, the driving, the thumping, the boom boom. Is there some, what clicks in your mind? How do you change that type of writing, you know, between the two? How do you do that?
Well, you know, you've touched on what I think is one of the primary lessons I use as a teacher. I also teach creative writing at the master's level at Antioch University, Los Angeles, and I'll be teaching a course at UCLA. And one of the things I like to teach is that good writing is good writing across genres. Sometimes students who like to write science fiction or horror, no matter what their ethnicity, feel shy about presenting those stories in traditional workshops because a lot of their workshop mates will be writing quieter stories about smaller moments, you know, moments of realization and epiphany and conflict, but that don't include car chases or zombies or spaceships. So I have that shyness. And my philosophy has always been just write your best fiction, create a real world. I think this is Stephen King's gift. A lot of people read Stephen King who might not care about horror in general, but they love his characters. So I just try to start with creating real people and putting them in this extraordinary circumstance, especially children. There's a child on the cover of this book, and as I compiled the stories, I realized so many of the stories were about children. And I think the reason I choose them is because they come from such innocence, but also have the ability to adjust so quickly emotionally to a change. I mean, there will be long-term effects, but in the moment, I think a child spends less time just trying to process, oh, my God, how can this be happening? Oh, my God, how can this be? And they just accept this is happening, you know, and just let's move on from there.
Just go with the flow.
Just go with the flow. And that is one of the keys to survival, adaptation. You know, Octavia Butler wrote Adapt or Die. That's one of her Earthseed parables. And I want to say one quick thing about Danger Word, because I know in the world of The Walking Dead, it would seem that that story was inspired by The Walking Dead. But Steve and I, that was my first collaboration, fiction collaboration with my husband, Stephen Barnes.
Yes,
it was published. And it was published long before The Walking Dead was on the air.
Okay.
It might even predate the graphic novel, but I don't know. I hadn't read it anyway. But we love zombies. Always had loved zombies. And we wrote that story.
You know, you got to be careful saying stuff like that. You know what I mean? You're a parent.
I don't mean I would love them.
Zombies. I know. I'm just messing.
Let me you know what? You are so right. I'm a very afraid of zombies. I think of all the movie monsters, I think zombies scare me the most, specifically that notion of your loved ones then trying to attack you. And on a more serious note, you know, I did see some immense personality changes in my mother as she aged, or as she was ill, rather. And I think that's something that as a society we don't talk about. You know, people are so unprepared for what illness means. It's not just cancer doesn't just mean, you know, you get sick and there are cancer cells in your body. It might mean that your personality changes. It might mean the drugs that you're on might make you forget things. So it's more like dementia-type symptoms that you weren't expecting now. When a loved one looks at you with a lack of recognition, there is so little to prepare us for that emotionally. And zombies really push that button for me. They're total, not only a lack of recognition, but, you know, they want to eat you, which is, of course, the exaggeration. That's the metaphor. But, yes, we actually wrote Danger Word long before The Walking Dead. And, in fact, we crowdfunded a short film based from Danger Word. We just, you know, Steve and I got tired of waiting for Hollywood to produce our work. We've had so many projects in and out of option. I have stuff under option and in various stages of, you know, perhaps development right now. I say perhaps because you never know. But with crowdfunding, you know, we worked with my friend Lucina Fisher, who was the director. We had a great editor, Terrence Taylor, And we got on Facebook and Indiegogo, and we raised our money. We hired Frankie Faison, you know, the actor. He was spinning the wire, Coming to America, you name it, to play Grandpa Joe. And it's at www.dangerword.com, www.dangerword.com. You can see that on YouTube for free. But we really just wanted to do something different, you know? Like, how about a survival story that has some Black folks in it? And we changed the gender.
And I was going to bring that up.
Yeah, we did. We did.
I was going to bring that up.
Boy.
I was going to bring the issue of that you have people of color in your stories, and that is something new because I grew up with my father. He got me hooked on to reading sci-fi and fantasy and things that, you know, I was reading Ursula Le Guin and Octavia Butler. I was a kid reading her stuff, you know, it's just crazy. And it was like, wow, Black people. But you know what's funny? As a kid, I didn't necessarily say, wow, Black people, but it was like, wow, somebody like me, the cover, the person looks like me, and they have skin like me and their hair is like me. And I was just drawn to it. I would read other sci-fi fantasy things, and it was, like, great. For some reason, picking up Octavia Butler was like, wow. It was just, you know, under the covers with the flashlight, like, yummy, delicious, you know. And so for your stories, too, I think this is great. You have Latino people in there. They're speaking their language, and they're dealing with the same issues that other characters in these other books are dealing with, but that don't look like me. It's like, are there no Black people or Latino people or Asian people in the future? What about Native Americans even, you know?
I know. Well, and, you know, this has been a failing of vision. I think listening to these old radio shows from the 40s and 50s, you had so many futurists, the great futurists, who could envision traveling to the moon, colonies in space, but they couldn't envision women being anything but sort of secretaries. And they couldn't envision a multicultural world, a multicultural universe. That is changing, you know, not only because more artists of color are coming into the field, but with pressure, like, for instance, this Gods of Egypt trailer, which caused such a furor when apparently there was no attempt at all to even make anyone look brown. I mean, like, let's just pretend this isn't Egypt, and we'll just go on with Hollywood business as usual. That Hollywood business as usual model is shifting. And there are a lot of reasons it's shifting. Some of it is demographics. You know, look at how The Wiz Live did for NBC. So you think we're going to see more live stage shows on NBC for Blacks? Yes, we will. As Blacks.
No, but isn't that racist?
Office.
Wait a second. Isn't that racist? The Wiz was all Black. Is that not racist?
I know. Why can't they have an all white The Wiz? Oh, wait. That was called The Wiz of Oz.
Right.
Yeah.
What the? Oh my God!
You know,
I was like,
I mean, we're joking, but there is blowback, you know, as sort of, I guess what some people refer to as whiteness, which I think is it's not white people. You know, I'm not talking about individuals. There are many whites who are my fans and family, and literally my family, brothers-in-law. But the idea of the white world, a white-driven, centered world is starting to change in this country. And as that happens, we will see blowback. You know, when people see the Black actor, Black British actor John Boyega as Finn for the Star Wars and those posters, there's blowback. There's grousing about it. There was grout. Why is Rue Black in the Hunger Games? Well, she was Black in the book. That's why.
No, she had a tan. She just was like, she had a tan. She was like Italian, Southern Italian or something. I don't know.
Southern,
what are you
matter.
Talking about? I'm confused.
and you almost have to laugh to keep from crying. I mean, there are ways this manifests that are not funny, you know, like, for instance, in our law enforcement, this idea of sort of dehumanization, and you're not the person I'm protecting. You're the person that I'm protecting other people from. That can be very uncomfortable and deadly for young Blacks especially. So there are aspects of those changes that will be painful. I think it's going to be, in fact, a very violent next few years in terms of supremacist violence and this kind of thing. But at the same time, our kids, my son, will have grown up for 8 years with a Black president, which, you know, I can't even calculate what kind of impact that has on a young person. There are more and more book covers with people of color on the cover, because back in the day, you might have black writers and black characters, but they weren't even black on the cover. You see what I'm saying? That's how deep
no.
it was.
Yep. There were not people on the cover. So, you could not gravitate, you know, but there's more and more.
No.
But I think what's interesting is that people, you know, writers, you are teaching, so you have a larger impact. As just being a writer is great, but being a teacher is an awesome impact, because you're creating a future, a different future, because you're dropping, you know, ideas into the minds of these, you know, young people in school.
I like to think so. I've already had, you know, some star students I'm very proud of. Daniel Jose Older, you know, is a Cuban American writer whose Shadow Shapers is making a big splash in young adult fantasy, breaking barriers not only with the black girl on the cover, but the black girl with the natural hair, you know, and people holding
mm-hmm.
their faces up against the book. So they say, look, this hair is like mine. That is a very powerful feeling. I get why creators create people who look and feel like them. I don't fault white writers for that. You have to learn how to write the other, want to write, and some don't need to try, because then you get books like The Help, where I wish, you know, let's just stay away from writing about black women.
Right.
Write what you know. But all of us do have that drive to create images for ourselves, for our children. And as we have learned as black viewers and readers, we can relate to the experiences of a white male protagonist, a white female protagonist, you know, an Asian protagonist. We've had to learn how to see ourselves in characters who don't look like us. And I know white readers can also do that. They have not been asked as often to do that. But as the years go on, it will be more and more common that these so-called universal characters will just look like the world, and it won't be so
mm-hmm.
important. That time, you know, has not arrived, but it is. You could see it. You could see it coming on the horizon. It's a very exciting time to be an artist. So anyone out there who is wondering, do I have it? Can I do it? If you're a writer, filmmakers, especially in an era when you can literally make a film on your iPhone, there are no excuses. There are no excuses. This is the time.
Okay, we're coming down to the wire here. And last question, what's with the pets? Do you have pets? What's with the dogs and the cats? I'm scared now. I don't know what about it. I don't want to get a pet. You're making me scared. Like, really?
I have
I mean, can you talk to me about this?
I have to admit, I'm afraid of
dogs. I'm talking about the story. She has a lot of dogs and cats and things going on in the story.
You'll notice that the cats come out pretty well in my story. I don't have any evil cat stories, but I do have a couple of dog situations. I think part of that is ancestral memory. You know, I was just very struck by stories of slaves running away from dogs and the damage the dogs did to them. But also when I was a baby, like 18 months old, my mom had a very mean German Shepherd. So to me, the picture of evil in animal form is
the German
Shepherd.
Oh, my God.
Yes.
Oh, my God.
I'm trying to get over
it. I'm
my
a cat
wants
person.
A dog.
Your dog wants a dog?
He wants
okay.
a dog. So I'm going to try to get over that phobia, but I've just told him right out, it will not be a German Shepherd. You could just check that one off the list.
Wow. Well, we've had a great conversation. I think the sound for some reason cut off, but the interview is going to be archived. So I did tweet and let people know that if they, for some reason, all of a sudden stop hearing us, it's okay. You'll be able to listen to the whole interview. It'll be archived in about 15 minutes. But
perfect.
Wow, thank you so much for coming on. And we had a great conversation. I enjoy really speaking with you. Tell your husband I said hi. He's an awesome, what do you say, coach, if you will, as well as he's still helping people in that manner.
Oh, absolutely. Coaching writers. He has a new book actually called Star Wars Save My Life that is on Amazon now, that is literally to help people use their favorite, it's a parable to help people use their favorite genre films to find strategies
mm-hmm.
for creating more creativity, wealth, better fitness and health. So yeah, we are still out there trying to help people, and absolutely.
I just wanted to give him a shout out because I did see the thing about the Star Wars book, and I was like, wow, look at him. He's just going and going. He's like, They're a power couple. Okay, you know, they just have, like, and it looks like you guys bounce and feed off each other, which is a great thing, because always in the news nowadays, it's always like the destruction of the Black family or just marriage in general. Nobody can stay married forever. And it seems like you guys are doing a great job at it, you know, raising your kids and also, you know, doing what you love, the writing and coaching and teaching. I mean, that's a form of coaching, if you will, teaching, you know. So I bow down to you for that.
Well, thank you so much. We are very mindful of the fact that, that role models are necessary, and we're blessed to have found each other. We want to show people that, yes, it can be real. But in the meantime, what are you doing, you know, to fulfill your dreams and self-actualize with or without a partner? So mm-hmm. absolutely. If people want to get on Steve's mailing list, it's just www.liferite.com. And that will get you on a mailing list to get emails about free workshops and webinars and products and announcements. So thank you. Yeah, we're trying to help spread the word.
No, that's great. Well, you go back to sleep now, and I will continue on with my day.
All right. Thanks so much.
Thank you so
much. Thanks for
having
me on the show.
Bye-bye. You're welcome. Okay, bye-bye. Thank you, everybody, for tuning. And I'm very sorry if the sound caught off on you. But, again, like I said, you'll be able to listen to the archive on iTunes and also here on Blog Talk Radio. I'm going to be giving away some copies of the book, Ghost Summer Stories. So check me out on Twitter, at Joy Keys. Become a fan on Facebook, Saturday Mornings with Joy Keys. Or tag me on Instagram, Saturdays with Joy Keys. I hope you guys have a wonderful weekend and a great week coming up. Thank you so much. Next weekend, I'll be speaking with author Kimberly Lawson Roby about her latest book, and that's going to be at 11 a.m. Eastern here on Blog Talk Radio. So I hope you can join.
Muscle aches, rashes.
To find an answer.
Hair loss. I'm so tired.
You need to ask your doctor the right question.
Could I have lupus?
For answers, for support, for hope, visit couldihavelupus.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services Office on Women's Health and the Ad Council.